Hello. Welcome to our verse-by-verse in-depth Bible study with Bible teacher Dr. Bob Utley. Now, here's Bob.
We're starting our study of 1 Kings. It's really a continuation of the history that was in 1 and 2 Samuel. It's going to deal with the life of Solomon. It's going to start the first couple of verses, maybe the first chapter or two, really kind of close out 2 Samuel, the life of David, and begin with the life of Saul. The historians of 1 and 2 Samuel and 1 and 2 Kings share the same worldview. There is one God. He is both loving and just. He called Israel to call a world, and he is using the line of Abraham to bring forth a Messiah to be a blessing to the whole world. And this is kind of the underlining presuppositions throughout this. Let's look at the text, if we could. Now, King David was advanced in age. We learn from 2 Samuel 5:4 that he was 30 years old when he became king, and he reigned 40 years. From 1 Kings 2:11, we see that he reigned for a little while in Hebron, just over Judah, and then later he was over the entire people of God in Jerusalem. Now, notice again it says, and they covered him with clothes, but could not keep him warm. It seems that this first account of the very feebleness of David is meant to give a background to the rebellion of Adonijah. And also to show that his asking for this young concubine that we're going to be introduced to in just a moment was really an attempt to seize the throne. Both these seem to be reasons why this was brought up. So his servant said to him, let them seek a young virgin. Now, this is going to be someone to basically keep him warm. Now, there's two possible motives here. It says that he couldn't get warm with blankets. We know from ancient medical practices that putting another person next to a sick person or a cold person or an old person was a theory of keeping them warm. And they're going to pick a young virgin. I think there was something of the hope of his servants that possibly a new young concubine might revive David, might stimulate him, might increase his energy level. Whether that's true or not, we just can't be certain. It's obvious for warmth. Notice it says that the king may be kept warm at the end of verse 2. But look at verse 3. So they searched for a beautiful girl. Now, why for a beautiful girl just to act as a heating blanket? Well, because she'd be the wife of the king, and she'd become part of his harem and become holy because he's holy and royal because he's royal. And so it had to be a special lady. They found a girl named Abishag, and she was from, she's a Shunammite. Now, this is somewhere in the plain of Jezreel, and we see that in Joshua 19:18 and 1 Samuel 28:4. The girl was very beautiful, and she became the king's nurse and served him. And that's pretty much what she did. But the king did not cohabit with her. Now, this little phrase is mentioned, I think, for the fact that although she was considered to be in close contact with the king and therefore part of his harem, there really weren't any sexual relationships involved. And maybe that's why that later on Adonijah is going to ask for her. But because she had been close to the king, she did have this status as the king's wife. Now, Adonijah, in verse 5, that he is the fourth son of David. Now, the other two sons was killed, Amnon, and then Absalom revolted. We have one more son named Daniel, but he apparently died as a child. And you might want to see 1 Chronicles 3:1. So this was the next in line, and it seemed like the right of progenitor, he should be king. His name basically means Adonai, with the my preposition, my Lord Yahweh, or Lord Yahweh my Lord. So it's the two names for God, Adonai and Yahweh here, with the preposition my. Notice it says he exalted himself. Well, how did he exalt himself? Next few verses tell us. Number one, in verse 6 it says, and his father never crossed him at any time. He was kind of a spoiled brat. Also in verse 6, he was a very handsome man, which seems to be part of being king. Remember that Saul was handsome, 1 Samuel 9:6. David is handsome, 1 Samuel 16:12. Absalom is handsome, 2 Samuel 14:25, I believe. Maybe 14:23. Can't read my own writing. It's 14:25. And then next, he was born after Absalom, verse 6. Again, he was the oldest remaining son. And verse 7, he had conferred with Joab and Abithar. Apparently, he had planned this with two of the very leading people. Joab, the commander of the army, and Abithar, the line of Eli, the priest. And so you see how the cooperation here had gone on. Now, notice what it says. He had 50 for himself chariots and horsemen with 50 men run before him. Now, this is going to be very similar to what Absalom did. this idea of people running before him. You might want to see 2 Samuel 15:1, and also this idea of a sacrificing feast. We see it down here in verse 9. That's similar to what Absalom did in 2 Samuel 15:11 and 12. So Adonijah kind of parrots Absalom, and apparently Absalom was fulfilling the expected procedures of becoming a king. Now, it's interesting to me where it says Abathar the priest, and then in verse 8 it says Zadok the priest. Oh, we know from earlier studies that Abathar was the remaining descendant of the slaughter by Saul of the priest of Nob in the tabernacle, and Abathar went to be with David. After at least the capture of Jebus, Zadok also becomes high priest. There were two high priests. Now, some say this was because that the tabernacle, what was left after the Philistines destroyed Shiloh, whatever that was left, was moved to another place. At this point, Gibeon. Now, it wasn't the Ark of the Covenant. The Ark of the Covenant was brought to Jerusalem. But what was left of the tabernacle and the brazen altar and all that was in Gibeon. And we learn later on that Zadok was of the control of the brazen altar in Gibeon, and Abathar apparently served the Ark in Jerusalem. Now, Zadok is said to also be of Aaronic descent. We find that from 2 Samuel chapter 8, verse 17, and 1 Chronicles chapter 6, verses 3 through 8. We also see that he served in Gibeon from 2 Chronicles 16:39. He was also a Levite warrior. He's listed among the warriors of Levi, surprisingly enough, in 1 Chronicles 12:28. And, of course, he was co-priest with Abathar. You might want to see 2 Samuel 8:17 and 1 Chronicles 15:11. Some think that the word Sadducees comes from the word Zadok. We're just not sure. And verse 8, there are three groups that are not mentioned that Adonijah did not invite. First of all, he did not invite Zadok the priest. He did not invite Benaiah, the leader of David's special military force. And he did not invite Nathan the prophet. And here's a couple of the groups we're not sure of. Shimei and Rei, we have no idea of who they are. This is not the Shimei that cursed David. It's another one. And the mighty men who belonged to David. Now, these were at special bodyguard of Benai is a commander over. So they were not invited to this special dinner. So as a selected group, all the other king's son, all the other court officials apparently were invited. Now, in verse 9, it says, Adonijah sacrificed at a stone close to the well of En Rogel. Now, this was pretty close to Jerusalem, down the Kidron Valley. Some say this stone is a serpent stone, but really I think it means sliding or gliding. It may have been a large stone that slid down the hill into the Kidron. We're just not exactly sure, but it was a prominent place, and everybody in Jerusalem would have known that. Let's see. Now, in verse 11, Nathan came and spoke to Bathsheba, the mother of Solomon. Nathan is going to plan how they're going to confront David. The whole reason this has happened is because David had neglected in informing the people that he had apparently already chosen Solomon. And now he's becoming feeble, and people are taking advantage of him. And so they're going to kind of plan how they're going to approach him. Nathan says, you go in and talk to David first, and then I'll come in right behind you and confirm it. And so they kind of work that together. And so now come, please let me give counsel and save your life and the life of your son Solomon in verse 12. Now, we know from history that many times when a new king was anointed, that he killed all his rivals, all the other members of his family, or all the other possible heirs to the throne, and that seems to be what Nathan is alluding to. Go at once to King David and say to him, have you not, my lord the king, sworn to your maidservant, saying, surely Solomon your son shall be king after me and shall sit on my throne? Why then has Adonijah become king? Man, the time was short. Adonijah was at this banquet. How long this banquet lasted, I don't know. But the end of the banquet was going to be to anoint and acclaim Adonijah king. So there had to be rapid procedures involved to overcome this. Now, this idea about sworn to your maidservant, there's not any clear recollection in the Old Testament of this oath being made to Bathsheba. There seems to be some allusion to it in 2 Samuel chapter 12, verse 25, in 1 Chronicles 22:9 through 13, and 1 Chronicles 28, verses 4 through 7, but only an allusion, never a specific statement. Now, notice it says in verse 10, Bathsheba went into the king in his bedroom. Now, she was not invited. Probably, I don't know how long it had been since she had been there, but since she was uninvited, when she came in verse 16, she prostrated herself before the king. The king knew what this meant. He said, what do you want? And so she makes this request about how he had swore to her that her son would be king. And now, behold, Adonijah is king, and now, my lord the king, do you not know it? And so David was informed what was happening, and he did not know it. Now, in verse 20, we see they're kind of flattering David, but I think it's true. My Lord the King, the eyes of Israel on you, and tell them who shall sit on the throne of my Lord the King after him. Now, a historical precedent had not been set. Saul's son did not follow him. And so it was kind of generally understood that the oldest son followed his father as king, but that is not always true. And so David had, they were looking to David to tell them who would be king after him. Tell you the truth, Adonijah was the most likely person. Why? He was the oldest. He was very handsome. He looked like a king. The most unlikely person was Solomon because of all the sin with Bathsheba and all the problem that caused. But we're going to see. Otherwise, verse 21, it will come about as soon as my lord the king sleeps with his fathers. Now, that's interesting. This sleep with his fathers, sleep is an Old Testament idiom for death. And, of course, the Jews believed there was an afterlife, but it was kind of a shadowy existence in the netherworld or the underworld where people were there and they were conscious, and they may even have been in family groupings there, but there was no fellowship and no real joy. I really think when it says to sleep with your fathers means that you're going to be buried in the royal tomb with other members of your family, and that's apparently what this means. When it says, my son Solomon and I will be considered offenders, the word here is sinners, but it means offenders in a political sense. And obviously, as heir to the throne, he might be killed. In verse 22 and following, it's where Nathan comes in and kind of confirms what Bathsheba has said. And he even goes so far as to say in verse 25, there the crowd's already saying, long live King Adonijah. Now, this kind of got David's blood going, and he's about to do something. Look in verse 28. King David called Bathsheba, and she came to the king's presence, and the king vowed and said, as the Lord lives, verse 29. Now, this is a play on the word for Yahweh. It's from Exodus 3:14. It's from the Hebrew verb to be, and I think it means the ever-living, only-living God. Literally, it's I am that I am, or I am the ever-present, ever-living one. And so here's an oath that David makes. A parallel to this same kind of oath would be 2 Samuel 4:9. Who redeemed my life. This is a very common phrase. There's two words for redeemed. One, they both mean to buy someone back, slavery or economic indenture. But one has the idea of a personal agency. So God purchased David. The opposite of it would be that God sold them. You see that in the book of Judges quite often. Now in verse 3 it says, as I vowed to you, there's that reference to that vow that we have no record in the Old Testament of, your son Solomon shall be king after me. He was a very unobvious choice. May the Lord the King live forever, Bathsheba says him in verse 31. That's a strange thing to say to a dying man. Maybe it's just polite court ritual. Some say it's a view of the afterlife, but I think that's not true. Some may say, may the life force of David continue on in his descendants on the throne, kind of based on 2 Samuel 7, and that may be a better understanding here. So David in verse 32 is going to call Zadok the priest and Nathan the prophet and Benaiah, the leader of the king's bodyguard. He's going to call his own bodyguard, going to call some of the servants, and they're going to take him to the Gihon Spring. Now, this is not really a spring. It's more of a holding little a pond where the water of Jerusalem comes, a very special place, closer to the city than where Adonijah is at En-Rogel, and they're going to anoint Solomon there, and look at where it says going to make him ride on the king's mule in verse 33. Now, we learned that that was especially reserved for the king. We see 2 Samuel 13:29, and of course we see Absalom taking the king's donkey early was trying to do the same thing. Josephus says that Solomon was 14 years old at this time. Most scholars would say he was about 20, but we don't know how old he really was. Both Zadok the priest and Nathan the prophet seem to anoint him, although it seems to be the priest himself that did the anointing. If it was a peaceful transition, but if it was one to a different kind of person, to a different dynasty, quite often it was the prophet. They blew the trumpet, and of course that's the idea of communicating in battle in both religious and civil affairs. Now here we have the word anoint, of course, means same root as the word Messiah. It meant to assemble. Prophets, priests, and kings were anointed as a sign of God's calling and choosing. Now notice it says, I have appointed them ruler over Israel and Judah. Still a little separation there, a little bit of tension still among the tribes. In verse 38, we have a mention of this army of David made up of what we think are Cretans and Philistines. And that's what the Septuagint translates these two group names. Now notice they went to the tent to get the anointing oil. That would be the tabernacle that was at Gibeon. The Ark of the Covenant, of course, was still in Jerusalem from 2 Samuel 6:17. And when Adonijah finished eating, Jonathan, the son of Abathar the priest, came in. Now, he had been this reporter quite often. He was acted as a reporter or news runner in 2 Samuel 15:36 and 17:17. He does the same thing here. And here's the report that he gives, that all these folks had gone and anointed Solomon. Even David's court officials had bowed down to him. And so down through here is eight different groups from verse 44 to through verse 47 that acknowledged Solomon as king. And so Adonijah knew that it wouldn't work. He ran and took hold of the horns of the altar. Now this, of course, goes back to the horns of the altar with the projections on the corner. Now we see Exodus 27:2 and Exodus 30 verse 10 and also Exodus 29:12. We learned there was placed the blood was smeared during sacrifices. Leviticus 4 verses 7, 18, 25. Leviticus 4, verses 30 and 34, and several other passages that are in your notes. It was a holy thing. And a man could come and hold on to those horns for safety if he was innocent. So Adonijah does that. It was a temporary refuge, we learned from Exodus 21, verses 12 through 14. And he wants Solomon to swear that Solomon won't kill him. And Solomon says, if he's a worthy man, in verse 52. Now this goes back to Deuteronomy 3:18 and 1 Samuel 18:17, where it meant a valiant soldier. If he doesn't try a political overthrow, Solomon says, I won't hurt him. Adonijah is capitulating here by bowing down to David, and David says, go to your house, i.e., not house arrest, but stay in Jerusalem and don't cause any trouble. Now, in chapter 2, David is going to die. He says he's going the way of all the earth. That's kind of reminiscent of what was told would happen in 2 Samuel 7:12. It's going to happen to all men. The king was very young. As I said, Josephus said he's 14. Notice he in verse 2 and 3, I mean, excuse me, 3 and 4 of chapter 2, David kind of gives Solomon the same charge that Joshua got in Joshua 1, 6 through 9. It has some real affinity to the words of Moses in Deuteronomy 31, 6 through 8, and Deuteronomy 31, 23. Very Deuteronomic passage. It mentions the law of Moses here, which in my opinion shows that Deuteronomy was written long before King Josiah. And then verse 4 is the condition, if your sons are careful. And here's the conditional element of the covenant of Solomon, because we know in later years, though he started so good, he ended so poorly. And that conditional element is seen. If you'll walk before me, lifestyle faith, in truth, and the word here is truthfulness or trustworthiness, really, with all his heart, with all his soul. And this sounds a whole lot like the Shema, the prayer of Deuteronomy 6, 5. You shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel. This is a direct reference to the promise of the Messiah in 2 Samuel 7, verses 12 and 13, would be a descendant of David. Now, David, in verses 5 through 9, remembers some people who had caused him trouble or had been a real blessing to him that he wanted Solomon to remember. First was Abner, because he had shed innocent blood. Excuse me, it was Joab, because he shed innocent blood. First of Abner, now we'll see 2 Samuel 3:27, and then Amasa. 2 Samuel 20:10, and it wasn't in war. It was absolutely a bloodthirsty acts, and that was on his own head. And he asked Solomon to take care of it. And then Barzillai, which apparently was a good friend of his from 2 Samuel 19:31 through 38, when he fled from Absalom. And then Shimei, who of course was this descendant of Saul who cursed David as he fled. You might well see 2 Samuel 16 verses 5 through 8, and also 2 Samuel 19 verses 18 through 23. And Solomon is told to take care of that. In verse 10, Solomon dies. Running out of time. And in verse 19, that Adonijah came to Bathsheba and said, oh, I have one little thing I want you to do for me. I should have been king because I'm the oldest one, but it's obvious that God was on Solomon's side, and you're in the place of honor. You have Solomon's ear. I want you to ask for one thing. And Bathsheba said, well, what do you want? I want Abishag, the Shunammite, for my wife. Now, whether Adonijah really thought she was beautiful and wanted to marry her, or whether he's trying to have another claim for the throne is really uncertain as his true motive. But I'm afraid it was misunderstood by Solomon anyway. Bathsheba did not understand it as that. But look at Solomon's reaction in verse 22. You might as well ask for the kingdom. And he just reacts to that big time. He is my older brother. You know, we'll see Deuteronomy verse 20, chapter 21, verses 15 through 17, about the concept of the oldest son inheriting the rights and all of that of the family. The progenitor is also seen in both the Assyrian documents, the Nuzi documents, and the Mari documents, so it was very common in the ancient world. Well, Solomon thinks he's trying to take the throne, and he asks his chairman of his army to go and kill him, and he certainly does. Now, he's going to call in Abathar in verse 26. And he's going to remind him about how he was a rebel along with Adonijah. And he's going to say, he's going to kind of exile Abathar to his hometown, a Levitical city not far from Jerusalem. It's called Anathoth. And he's going to have to live there kind of in exile and not be priest anymore. But Solomon's not going to kill him for two reasons in verse 26. Number one, he carried the ark of the Lord. And number two, he was afflicted in all the ways as David was. You might want to see 1 Samuel chapter 21 through 22. Okay? And you'll see how Abathar was with David. So Solomon dismissed Abathar from being priest of the Lord in order to fulfill the word of the Lord. This word, fulfill the word of the Lord, seems to be a reference back to 1 Samuel 2, verses 27 through 36, where the sons of Eli would be cut off for being priest. Now, in verse 28, we see that Joab fled again like Adonijah had originally fled to this tent where the Ark of the Covenant was in Jerusalem and was holding on to the horns of the altar there. You might want to see 1 Kings 1:50. Benaiah was sent to kill him, but it kind of bothered Benaiah to kill somebody holding on the altar, so he came back and told David he won't leave the altar. He won't let go of the horns. Solomon, not David, kill him anyway. He's guilty of innocent blood. He killed both Abner and Amasa, and his blood will be on his own head, because this holding on the horns of the altar was only meant to protect those who kill someone innocently or in passion or in war, not premeditated murder. And all of Joab's murders like this, of these two military commanders, was done for personal reasons outside of battle. So he was guilty of his own blood. So the man goes back and kills him right there at the altar. Now he's going to be buried with his own house in the wilderness in verse 34. We learn that is near Bethlehem. And that seems to be where he was located. And verse 36 and following is the account of what happened to Shimei. Now, Solomon, told him that he was to build him a house in Jerusalem and stay there. Now, he was one of the descendants of Saul. Apparently, Solomon wanted to separate him from the tribe of Benjamin so he couldn't cause any riots or trouble. And told him if he'd stay in Jerusalem, he could live. For about 3 years, he did that. But a couple of his slaves ran away to a Philistine city. And he went after them. Maybe it was some kind of procedure he had to come in person. And when he did, he crossed the Kidron and broke his own vow. And when he got back, Solomon summarily had him put to death. And here we see that Solomon is kind of establishing his throne. Now, some have said it's very surprising that the mild, humble boy that prays so well in chapters 3 and 4 is this ruthless man of chapters 1 and 2 that kind of eliminates the enemies at the throne. I think Solomon was young, but I think he was acting in the common way of his day. And really, his father is the one who told him to act on this thing. So maybe he's doing it because Dad asked him to, as well as his own personality. I think each one of these things, you can see the cause and the reason in history why it had to be done. It's going to be interesting now that the account of David's life has passed away. Solomon's throne is established. And now, beginning in verse 3 through about verse 12, is going to be, through 11, is going to be the acts of Solomon, how he did many different kinds of things. But we see he is established both in a godly way in chapters 3 and 4, and then in this what seeming rather ruthless way of chapter 2. And yet it all fits into the history of the ancient Near East. We can't judge that period of time by our standards. We have to judge it by its own standards. And, of course, Adonijah would have been much more cruel and probably killed Solomon right off the bat. Solomon had mercy on him, but apparently he was still scheming. He had mercy on Shimei. But apparently he did not obey Solomon. And Joab could never be trusted. He was always a powerful man manipulating people. And finally he had to be dealt with too. Well, that'll start us off in 1 and 2 Kings. I hope you'll look at a brief introduction, maybe in your NIV study Bible. It has an excellent introduction and outline. And we'll be dealing with chapters 3 and 4 next week. I hope the study of 1 Kings will be much like the study of 1 and 2 Samuel. We see God establishing this nation, working with his people, setting some principles of how he deals with both corporate entities and individuals, and how God is working to bring about the Messiah through this people that he's chosen when he chose Abraham in Genesis chapter 12. Well, I've enjoyed being with you, and I'll see you again, same time, same place, next week. God bless you.